Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. I know it's been a while that I haven't posted up stuff and all that. It's kind of hard for me to find stuff, dig stuff up, vet, just make sure everything's on the up and up. And not to mention, it's not that I don't want to do the show, but sometimes it gets hard to gather stuff, dig deep, and part of me, I hope you all can understand, the enthusiasm for the show, as I had 7 years ago when this show started. Yes, our anniversary has come and gone, ladies and gentlemen. It's just that it seems that a lot of people that I know don't want to do it, or it gets harder and harder to do this show and getting people together to do this show, especially nowadays with the cost of everything going up, has affected a lot of people. And just to get everybody together, it's more so like, as I've told many people, hurting squirrels. It's not hurting cats, it's not hurting ducks, it's hurting squirrels. And I should say this, it's like herding squirrels with ADD and hyperactive ADD and everything else. You know, it's hard to do. It's hard for me to get things going and find stuff that I want to talk about. Then after a day or two, it's like, oh, do I really want to talk about it? Should I talk about it? Or when I do talk about stuff, there's new, more information comes out, so I might have to re-record everything. So it's tough. It's not so much burnout as I talked about last year. It's trying to find the stuff to talk about and get everybody together to do it. And therefore, that's why a lot of folks that are on the same level as I am have been leaving me in the dust. And I have no gripes about them, no anything about them. That's why we've been kind of at times concentrating more so on our YouTube side of things than on the podcast side of things, because it's kind of hard to do things like we used to do 7 years ago when we first went on this adventure. Do we still want to keep doing this and have the channel, the podcast side of things channel open? Yes, we do. But for now, I want to talk about a couple of things that, yeah, I know it's a review, and I know some of you folks out there don't like reviews and all that fun jazz, but over the recent weeks, we've watched a couple new stuff that came out, one of which is Bloody Summer Camp. And what is Bloody Summer Camp? Bloody Summer Camp is a independent horror movie that's in we talked about Bloody Summer Camp with the creator of it, David Kerr, I think last year or the year before, something like that. It was a while ago that we talked to Dave about this movie. I can't easily go back to see when we talked about this, because how Podbean hosts the website now is way different than it was last year, and so I can't really go back and actually find things as quickly and more efficiently as I once did. But if you're listening to this, please take no offense. In a ways, I'm an old horror head, so what I'm about to is, please do not take this hard. I enjoyed Bloody Summer Camp wholeheartedly. I like the fact that it is what it is, and I enjoyed it and everything else. Let me put it like this out there for you folks listening at home or in the car or wherever you might be listening to this. This is, I want to say, without actually speaking to David himself, that in regards to this movie, I can't speak for him, but to me, this was his aspect of the slasher genre that was in the, I would say, floating around in the late 70s, early 80s, and going into the 90s, because that's when you had the Michael Myers, the Freddy Kruegers, the Jasons, you know, the Friday the 13th, the slashers. And to give you all some context, when out there, as part of this review, when a certain genre becomes big, you'll have a lot of the independent stuff flooding the market, or you'll have a lot of copycats flooding the market. When in the, I think the first Friday the 13th came out in like 77, something like that, in around there. Or when they were starting to come out, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Friday the 13th, the first Halloween, these came out in the late 70s, early 80s. And when they started to become big, and these movies were getting sequels after sequels after sequels, you started to see a whole mess of the slasher genre coming into play. And yeah, that's what happened. That's what we got. And most people will tell you, when it comes to the horror genre, there's cycles. Like for a couple years, vampires will be popular. Then werewolves will be popular. Then zombies will be popular. Then Frankenstein-type monsters will be popular. Then it'll loop back around to vampires. Then werewolves. Then, you know, ghost movies will come into play because, you know, whatever. Then that'll be part of the cycle. And we kind of saw it with the found footage film with Blair Witch. That became popular, and it became popular on the indie circuit because the found footage was cheap. Because if you look into the history of like Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity, these movies were done for like $30,000-$40,000, and they made bank. So you had a lot of these independent movies, independent houses, doing these found footage stuff in hopes to become the next Blair Witch, the hopes to become the next Paranormal Activity. So, with this Bloody Summer Camp is, I want to say, an homage to the slash movies of the 70s and 80s, especially the 80s. It is very cookie cutter reminiscent of that, and I'm not holding that against David in any way, shape, or form. It just felt like dirty jeans, or it felt like a comfy couch or a comfy blanket that you want to wrap yourself with. Did I see the twist ending coming? Oh, from a mile away, I saw it coming. And let me just say this. I want to bring it up on IMDb, so I'll be right back. You folks at home will not notice anything. Okay, let's get this done. Let me say this. Bloody, even though I'm kind of, seems like I'm bashing it, I'm not. I'm saying it to me, it's a warm blanket. You know, the comfy blanket, and the aspect of it is that a lot of you folks at home are like, "Oh, this is campy. This is this. This is that. It's stupid. It's this." I enjoyed it for what it was, and that again, that homage to the slasher flicks of the 80s and, you know, 70s and 80s and early 90s. It had that whole little bit of a twist. Was kind of maybe the aspect of him, like, giving, like, his take on Scream. I can't speak for David. I don't have him on. And now that I have IMDb up with Bloody Summer Camp pulled up so I have the names right, the big name stars, at least in this case, bigger, you'll see in a lot of indie films, the ones that are able to get the funds together or have a decent reputation for doing stuff, they'll have recurring stars in their films. In this case, Felicia Rose makes an appearance in this. I think she is also appearing in, I think, another one of David's, either she appeared in one of David's other projects, or she's something along those lines. I'll have to speak to David about that. And also, stars David Sheridan, who has also been in a lot of big name projects. I think like Scary Movie was one of them. Felicia Rose was in like the original Sleepaway Camp, and she's been in a lot of other big name productions, including I think it was like one of the Hatchet movies with Victor Crowley or something like that, which Victor Crowley, I think, was based on the Hatchet movies. Stuff like that. She's been in a lot of big-name stuff. And plus, this movie also features a lot of familiar faces to me. And I was like, hey, that looks like so-and-so. That looks like so-and-so. When I double-checked, I'm like, yeah, that is. And I'm talking about it in this movie. I'm not just talking, I'm sure David makes an appearance in this, but I'm talking about folks like Rita Christine, whom I've met many times before in the past, and she's a very lovely woman. And it also features none other and someone that we've spoken to on this show before, and that is Jesse L. Green, a.k.a. Captain D. Capitate, has been on this show. He's part of this movie. He makes an appearance in this movie. And none other as well, Matt Burns. And Matt, if you're watching this, if you're listening to this, be prepared. I'm calling you out. You should be telling folks, don't give this movie the rev. I'm in this. And he is going to, he's going to be my friend in regards to this, and he's going to rib me to no end. And Matt, yeah, I'm going to probably rib you this. I'm going to probably have to I'm going to have to let Big Candy watch this, and you're not going to hear the end of it. But it's bad enough. But the thing about, I think we've met Cody Falk before too, but I'm not sure. But it has a lot of folks that we've met before. In regards to this, and seeing these familiar faces in this, and it's me supporting not just David, an independent filmmaker. It's me supporting friends. It's why we've went to help with the filming of the movie Zero, just to be extras on set, because it helps them out so much. And it's one of the things that we do on the show, and we've done so many times that was like, listen, you have to, if you don't like what mainstream people are doing, you don't like the fact that horror movies nowadays don't have the blood, guts, and boobs that you enjoyed in the past, indie ways are the way to go. And that's what David kind of does. Because that was the cookie-cutter formula of the 70s and 80s. You needed blood, beasts, and breasts in, you know, your movies. And that's what David brings into this. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not. It's something that a lot of the horror genre in my eyes has kind of walked away from, because the way the horror genre is nowadays is that it has to be kind of more, I won't say family friendly, it has to be more PG-13, and it has to be more mid-ground PG-13, so it could be marketed more so towards the family friendly aspect, so everybody could go see it. You could bring the kids to see this. Yet a lot of folks, you know, a lot of the old horror heads, even though some of these PG-13 horror movies that are out there are good, can be good, just that to some of us old heads, it's missing something. It's missing the blood, the over-exaggerated blood, the beasts, and maybe even the breasts. So it's kind of missing that. And again, I've touted that it's like, oh, if you don't like what's being, you know, shown to you by mainstream Hollywood, you have to dig to find the independent stuff. And nowadays, that's always a good thing, because you'll have folks like Absurd Productions and EPG Films coming to, like, 4State and being present at conventions like 4State. And that's why I also recommend for you folks at home, if you like horror movies, that go to a horror convention if there's one near you. There's like Horror Find, No, it's Monster Mania. I think there's another one up here in the DC metro area, DC Baltimore area. That I know, Monster Mania, there's two, one in Baltimore area and one in like Jersey. I think there's also Scares That Care that happens in the area as well. There's Matt Burns does one in North Carolina, or helps with one in like North Carolina, South Carolina, something like that. There is another Fear Fest in Florida. These are great places to see a lot of independent artists like David and Mark Byrne and you know, Corey Coulter and the whole nine. You'll see a bunch of these folks at these conventions pushing, and including somebody like John Johnson pushing their independent movies at these events. Yes, you're gonna, for every John Johnson and Darkstone and Absurd Productions and EPG and David Kerr, for every person that puts their heart and soul into this, into their movies, and tries to make it of as high quality as you can, you're going to get a couple that actually, it looks like crap. It looks like they didn't put any heart and soul into it. And it's like they don't know what they're doing. But you have to figure, everybody has to start somewhere. For everyone that doesn't take themselves seriously, and it's kind of like doing it just to say they did it, and they treating it as a joke. But eventually, if they're getting traction, they'll get better. But you have to find these folks. You have to actually actively search them out. And a lot of times, it's hard. It's really hard for to see these folks. Amazon has done... Amazon has done a lot of folks dirty in the past in regards to Amazon Prime. We had that conversation with Mark and in regards to his company, Absurd Productions. excuse me, a few years ago, with what Amazon was doing with independent creators. So, what like I said, it's kind of hard. Amazon doesn't really promote independent creators that much. And you don't see it that much on Facebook, because Facebook has this kind of this habit of, we want you to promote your independent stuff, but we don't want you to promote your independent stuff. Because the reason why they say it is like, yeah, you can promote your independent stuff here. And the reason why they don't want, because it takes you to like a YouTube. It takes you to YouTube. It takes you to, like, if to use David as an example, because he sells physical copies of his movies. If it takes it to his website, or Mark Byrne, let's use David and Mark Burns as a example, it'll take you to their website to buy their DVDs. But YouTube doesn't like that, because if you're on their app, it's taking you away from their app. They don't like that. They want you on their app. But you have folks like me, and it's like, no, as much as Amazon doesn't like that, you're taking, if you want to buy a movie from David because it looks interesting, or you want to buy a movie from Mark because it looks like something that you might be interested in, you're taking, in a way, it sounds mean, you're taking money away from them from making their next project, number one, or you're taking money off their out of their wallets so they could pay for food. So it's kind of that contradictory things that Facebook is doing, and it's kind of weird and it's kind of bad. So granted, you have folks like Matt Burns that's constantly pushing, hey, you got to check this movie, I'm in it, you know, constantly every now and again promoting it. So that's always a good thing. And not to mention, It's on Bloody Summer Camp is on like iTunes. It's on Vudu. It's on a Vimeo. It's on a bunch of places that are digital as well. Will these places have these movies on their platform for too long? Good chance. Yeah, no. They're not going to have them on that long. The reason why I say that is that I'll use it as an example. Let's look at John Johnson's remake of the movie Plan 9 and his movie Skeleton Key 3 Part 2. Those two movies that I was able to get on Vudu, purchase on Vudu so I could have it digitally. Can I buy those movies now? No. Because from what I found out, if you're not as big as a Universal Studios, or if you're not as big as, you know, a Universal Studios, a Paramount, or a Sony that has the funds to keep their movies continually on Vudu, the independent stuff is not going to be there for that long. And will you, meaning even to this day, several years later, I could still watch the Plan 9 remake on Vudu. I could still watch Skeleton Key 3 Part 2 on Vudu. I just can't, you know, tell all of you at home, go to Vudu, go to iTunes, buy this, go to Vimeo and buy this. You might have to search for it, or you might have to contact like someone like John Johnson and say, you know, is there a way I could buy this movie? So there's a way to do that, and it's that sort of thing. That's why it's kind of hard. It's like when you hear someone like me, it's like, hey, check out Vudu, check out, you know, iTunes or Vimeo, see if it's still up there. If you want to rent it to see if it's for you or if it's something that you'd be interested in. That way, there could be that certain percentage going to someone like David, or if Mark has his movies up on Vudu, or they ever come up on Vudu, they get some, you know, he gets a couple of bucks tossed his way, that sort of thing. It's a way to support them, and I recommend that. I recommend this. If it's something you don't know, rent it. Feel free to rent it. I got it for like $10-$12 on Vudu. So, was it worth it? Yes, it was dang near worth it, because for multiple reasons. And speaking in regards to the whole aspect of independent stuff, let me just say this. I want to also talk about, or I should say, and not so much independent stuff, I want to talk about another thing that's been, it comes and goes in phases, and that is the anthology movie kind of ordeal, because I got a chance to rent the latest VHS movie. And for those of you that are not familiar with this type of film, this series has been out since, I want to say, 2009-ish, 2009-2010, and it's an anthology movie type of ordeal, and anthology movies like this have been out for a good many years. They've been out since, again, the 70s and 80s. I know them from the 80s, early 80s. You've had Tales from the Crypt. You've had movies similar to it from Creepshow, Tales from the Crypt. They were the early pioneers of this. So they're nothing new. And the best thing is the formula for this is, for these types of movies, is that you have an overarching storyline, meaning you have story point that, let me put it like this, how do I describe it? It's an overarching storyline with underarching storylines, meaning you have section one of the overarching storyline that leads to, you have 1, 2, 3, and 4, which will lead into A, B, and C. And like with Creepshow. Creepshow used to be a comic book. I think it still is kind of a comic book that you could find nowadays. In regards to the movies, if you find like Creepshow 2, which is available, I think on available on Netflix. It's available on Vudu. It's available on a lot of places. I think you could find it on Shudder and like places like that. And what it is like a kid might find a Creepshow comic and he's like, oh cool, a horror comic, and he'll like pick it up and it's like, I've heard about these. He goes to a hiding spot, or he or she goes to a hiding spot, and as soon as they open it up and it zooms in, the camera will zoom into the first page, which will lead to the first story. So you have one leading to A, and when that story pulls out, it'll lead into the second part of the overall arcing storyline. And it's like, oh my god, the kid might go, oh my god, I'm late for, you know, I have to get home. I have to get home. It's almost time to dinner. That kid could put, you know, roll up the comic and just put it in their back pocket, run home, and they toss the comic on the bed, which will spring open to point or story B. So that's how the formula of this rolls out. Same thing with the VHS storyline. It leads from A to B. It has the overarching storyline of 1, 2, 3, and 4 points. And it'll have the interlocking anthology part of the movie, which is A, B, and C. Obviously, there's more the shorts in there. These are like 5 or 6 minute mini movies in as a part of this. I've talked about VHS in the past, how much I've enjoyed it more than I've enjoyed it something like the ABCs of horror, which there are two. I've only seen one, which is the first one. I refuse to see the second one because I didn't like how ABCs of horror kind of handle themselves. You'd think, like, for example, the first one, it was like they go down, in regards to the ABCs of horror, it's A, B, they'll have this imagery of the Grim Reaper going through a dictionary, and the first story is A, the second story is B, the second story is C, and you'd think, the first letter A, and it'll have like A is for airplane. And you'd think it'd be a story about a horror story about something happening on a airplane. But no, it starts out, the reason why they called it airplane is because it starts out with a kid playing with a model airplane real quick, and the rest of the story has nothing to do with an airplane. But with VHS series, which I've enjoyed, including this movie, VHS 94, has to deal with these movies on VHS, or these shorts on VHS. The overall overarching storyline feels like a prequel to the other three, in a way. But it didn't, for me, the downside, it didn't have the same feeling that the other three had, whether it be VHS 1, VHS 2, or VHS Viral. It didn't have the same weight, or it didn't come off the same, but it had the same quality to it, meaning I enjoyed it very much, but it just didn't feel in the same vein. It was, but it wasn't. It just didn't fit in. It might have been it felt like the middle child of the series. It just didn't fit. But I enjoyed it very. I still enjoyed it. If I do recommend it, do I recommend buying it? No. If I do decide to buy it, it's gonna probably when it hits the $5 bin at some point, on Vudu. And even then, I'll have to think about it. But who knows? I do recommend, it's like, if the anthology horror story type of ordeal is your cup of tea, I do say at least check it out, give it a rant, and see if it's right for you. And if you want to buy it, buy it. I'm not going to stop you at all. And next up, let's talk about, let's go into something more, less horror-y for a moment. And let's talk about the Umbrella Academy. Well, what can I say about the current season, which is season 4, which dropped, I think it dropped in late May, early June. Or it seems like it's almost late July as it is, as of recording this. I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was just like the previous, like, two or three seasons. It was fun. It was eventful. I enjoyed it. I somehow finished it within, like, 2 or 3 days. And I think they handled, personally, I think they handled the whole aspect of Elliot Page situation very well. For those of you, for extreme heavy context, Elliot Page is a female-to-male transgender person. I'm not insulting Elliot in any way, shape, or form. I just want to say, with a lot of the TV shows that have someone who is legitimately transgender, it seems like they're propping up that character or that person to the nine. Like, here we go, here, you know, in that show, it's the character might be transgender, and it's like, look, here, we have this character that is part of the LGBTQ plus community. We have to shine the light on this character, and it comes out very forced. With this season of Umbrella Academy and Elliot Page, it doesn't. It was handled in one or two episodes, and that was it. And those, the times that it was brought up after that was not so much, it didn't come off as shoehorned in. It came off as very natural, and it came off very smooth, and I enjoyed it. And I can't wait to the next season, which is, I think, the final season of Umbrella Academy, to see how it turns out. And there's a lot of ins and outs and theories. I'm not going to go in here. I didn't write them. Not that because I didn't write them down, but still. It's the aspect of the whole ordeal in regards to that. And I enjoyed it. I liked it. I can't wait for the next season. The reason why I don't go into a lot of the theories and look at this, this is an homage to this, look at this, it's an homage to that, it's because a lot of channels, YouTubers, and podcasts do it way better than I, and that leads me into the final segment, Stranger Things Season 4, which came out the end, kind of like the end of May, and we had to wait a complete month for the final two seasons, two episodes of the season. So it was like, oh, season 4 part 1 comes out the beginning of like mid May, and mid to late May, and the final two episodes comes out at the start of July. You know what? Screw you, Netflix. Screw you. I'm not blaming the Duffer Brothers for that. Let me say this. I don't do phone calls that much or record phone calls when it comes to promotional stuff. Some of you remember that there was a character, and give me a pause, and it was the character, I think, Murray, in regards to it. Again, let me pause for a second. Yeah, Murray. I had to double check with IMDb. The character's name is Murray. We don't record, like I said, a lot of times TV shows give phone numbers out, and what, especially nowadays, if there's a it didn't really happen in the, it's something that you saw in a lot of earlier TVs or TV shows or movies, that they'd put out a number. It would be like 555-1234. Nowadays, they'll put in a legit phone number for people like you, me, the person down the street to call, and it's a promote actual legit number that you can call, and so they could promote the show. And the main reason I think a lot of show companies are doing this, like Netflix and, you know, Stranger Things and a lot of other places doing this, is because back in like the 70s, everything I think prior to like 2010, I'll say 2010, you had to pay for long distance. And if a company wanted to do this, that means someone like me, if I called the number, I had to pay like 10 cents, 20 cents a minute to hear that showed up on my phone bill for this call. And nowadays, since everybody has like unlimited long distance, that a lot of, you know, movies and, you know, shows and a lot of stations like ABC, NBC, Netflix, you know, and other places that do these, they could put out these promotional numbers with complete ease. Now, but that being said, let me show you what, or at least share with you, when Season 3 came out a couple years ago, they released a number that you could, in essence, call Murray and you'd get his voicemail. For those of you who don't remember that voicemail, or were not part, or weren't listening to this show, or not aware of it, let me share with you that I went on Skype, set everything to record the call, and this is that voicemail.
Hi, you have reached the residence of Murray Bauman. Mom, if this is you, please hang up and call me between the hours of 5 and 6 p.m. as previously discussed, okay? And if this is Joyce, thank you for calling. I've been trying to reach you. I have an update. It's probably best if we speak in person. It's not good or bad, but it's something. And if this is anyone but my mother or Joyce, well, you think you're real clever getting my number, don't you? Well, here's some breaking news for you. You're not clever. You're not special. You are simply one of the many, many nimwits to call here, and the closest you will ever get to me is this pre-recorded message. So, at the beep, do me a favor. Hang up and never call here again. You are a parasite. Thank you, and good day.
Sorry, this mailbox is full and cannot accept any more recordings. Thank you for using the voicemail system. Goodbye.
Let me just say this. One, that was the voicemail that, if you called the number of Season 3, that was the voicemail you got, or at least that's what happened when you called the number. I don't include the phone number for anything anymore. I don't think I included it last time, strictly because, just in case at some point, it actually goes to an actual human being, I don't want anybody to call it and harass somebody saying, hey, where's the voicemail for Murray? And everybody's like, huh, what, when, where? So, did they kind of continue the theme for Season 3? I should say, yeah, Season 4? In Season 4, yes, again, there's a lot of theories and stuff for Season 4. I'm not going to do it because there's everybody and their uncle with the podcast and the YouTube channel has given theories in regards to Stranger Things, in regards to, you know, who's the what's, the when's, where, how's, and why's. And did I enjoy Season 4? Yes, I did. I loved it. I liked all the nods. Before we get into the phone call, you know what? Let's get into the phone call because we're talking about those. In this new season, there's a pizza joint. And there's a number on the delivery vans. It's their version of Pizza Hut or Domino's. And you can call the number. And people have called the number, I want to say, in the show, people have called the number, you could, you know, order pizza and so forth and so on, it's part of the show. Is the number on the delivery vans or delivery vehicles? Yes. So has people called this number? Yes, they have. And what do you get when you call this number? Let me share with you what you get when you call this number.
We make everything fresh here at Surfer Boy except for our pineapple, which comes from a can. Oh, can you hold, dude? Brochachos, I just got another order before this dude on hold called. It's super specific, like weird specific. You ready? Okay, so first, it's going to be a 6-inch crust, and it's got to be super yellow. I don't know. Don't ask me, man. That's what they said, okay? Now then, we got to get the red sauce, okay? Just up to the edge on the crust, so don't go over. The next, they want, and this was really important, 4 chunks of white mozzarella, 3 habaneros, nice and bright orange, 2 green pepper slices, gotta let that habanero sing, man, and then 1, just 1, piece of blue cheese on top. Now, I know it's strange. Blue cheese is damn near mold, but hey, have you tried it? Try before you deny, bro. Okay, that's all I got. Did you get the order? Yeah? Cool. Okay, sorry, bro, Chacho. Thanks for waiting.
Again, that was the call, the voicemail, or what you got when you called the number seen in Season 4 of Stranger Things. Depending on when you listen to this episode, whether that number, when you see Stranger Things Season 4, if it's still available, when you watch or listen to this episode, and if that you call the number on the vans that are on the pizza joint, whether or not they're still valid. Either way, that's what you got when you called the number back in 2022. So, and I do apologize for the quality of the call. That's the best I can do through Skype and through my internet provider. But still, I hope you enjoyed it. And as I was saying, do I enjoy in regards to everything? There's a lot of nods to like Freddy Krueger. Yes, Robert Englund does make an appearance in this. There's a lot of nods to the slasher genre, and it leads off on another cliffhanger, as always. I can't wait to the final season. This was supposed to be, I think, the last season, but it was like, oh my god, it's so popular. Yeah, you guys are going to do the final season. So, the writing for season 5 will be starting shortly, and production will be starting, I think, next year, and we probably won't get it until mid to late 2023, if not sometime in 2024. So, according to a lot of folks, like especially the Duffer Brothers, that there's going to be a time jump regards to season 5, whether or not it takes. Season 4 takes place, and I think, in 1987. Whether this takes place closer to, it's closer to the 90s. If it takes place in the 90s, hopefully it does. But it's supposed to, from what I've been hearing, make it so that the characters in the show are closer in age to the characters in the actors and actresses in real life, meaning some of the younger folks like Millie Bobby Brown, and let me bring up the other folks here, like Millie. No, I don't want to scroll up. Caleb McLaughlin, and let's see. Come on, move. Finn Wolfhard. I'm butchering their last names, like Finn, Millie Bobby Brown, Gaitlin, Caleb, they're all, if not 18 as it is, they're over between 18 and 21 as it is, and they don't look like they were when the series first started several years, like almost, I want to say 5-6 years ago. I think when Millie Bobby Brown first started this, she might have been like 12, close to her number in the show, and closer to being 11 in the show. And now she's again 18, and like the other young cast, like Finn and Caleb, she's 18, and the other folks might be 18, if not older, 18, 19 years old. So they don't, like, Millie's character, 11, is supposed to be like a freshman in high school, and if not in the 8th grade, it's supposed to be in the 9th grade. And here she is, 18. So, yeah, that she should be a little bit older. Even though she looks young, they can try to make her look young. By the time the next season comes out, if it takes place a year or two later, she might not look like someone who is 14 or 15 years old. She might look like someone who actually is 25 or 30. So that can be hard, and for someone like her or Caleb to actually do that. Caleb actually looks like a young man, someone who is in their, you know, 20s. I'm not saying that's a bad thing for any of these actors or actresses, just that for what they do, it might be hard for the Duffer brothers to correlate that. So they have to do that time jump to hopefully make up for that. And you kind of saw, let me put a best example, you kind of saw that with the Harry Potter series, because the, with like everybody behind that, like Daniel Radcliffe, didn't look like he was, you know, a kid anymore by the time the 7th movie came out. And so therefore, they couldn't mess with a time jump, because with the Harry Potter movies, it was year 1, year 2, year 3, year 4, etc., etc., etc. So, filming movies takes time, and plus the actors and actresses in that that do movies have other projects and other commitments. Same thing with the folks behind Stranger Things. So, was season 4 worth it? Yes, it is. I know Netflix is getting hit hard on several fronts nowadays. You'll see a lot of haters hating on Netflix. And yes, Netflix has had its problems in the past in regards to things. And I've seen it, the pros and the cons in regards to what Netflix has done, and some of the showrunners of several different shows, what they've been doing, and how Netflix has been handling it. It seems like they've been flip-flopping more times than a politician when it comes to certain things. But Stranger Things is one of those shows. I'll say this, Stranger Things and The Umbrella Academy are one of the two shows that I've been trying to watch that has held up over the seasons and over the years, and still has managed to have a strong, high quality when it comes to their show. And it's going to be sad when the final seasons of these two shows hit Netflix, and everybody's going to be like, oh my god, I can't believe it's all over. And the only thing I could hope for is that it happens naturally, and the not just the season enders, but the show enders tend to tie up everything in a knot. Now, granted, you have stuff like, best example is the Full Metal Alchemist anime. The original run of that show, when it ended, it didn't end. It ended way before the manga actually, or for the American audience, the comic, the Japanese comic, ended. So they redid the show as Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. They revamped it, they rebooted it as Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. And once the manga ended, that way they could have a more accurate ending to it. Whether or not it is the a better adaptation of the manga or Japanese comic, hard to say, but either way, we'll see what happens at the end with these shows when they come out in probably 2024 or 2025, if the world holds up that long, that is. Look what happened in 2020, and look what's happening now. So we'll see what happens, we'll see what's going on. So that's it for the show. Yes, we've been authorized to, for a brief announcement. Yes, we've been authorized. Before we go, I got one last treat for you. Honestly, one last treat, because we had some phone calls and all that. This is something that I should have shared with you earlier this year, but it turned out that well, a lot was brought up to my attention earlier this year, because the latest season of Picard on Paramount Plus came out. It turns out you could call Q's phone, the character Q's phone, and calling that number, you got Q's voicemail. So please let me share with you that voicemail.
Hello, you have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.
Goodbye.
Again, I hope you enjoyed that final little treat, and as I was saying before I kind of interrupted myself, we did get approved for Otacon this year. We don't know. We'll get into that when we talk about Otacon later this month. We could only, unlike last year, that we were able to all 3 days, but because of how Otacon falls this year and how late they got back to us, meaning we put in for the press app. We'll get into it more. So we put in for our press passes mid-May. They didn't get back to us until like the start of June. And it was like a month later. So it was not like... We'll get into it when that episode drops. So until then, please enjoy our YouTube channel. All the links will be in the description of this episode. And I do... If you want to contact us, you're more than welcome to do so. Head on over to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast, or you can send and leave a comment in the pinned post. Or if you want, you could also let us know by emailing us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you either through a segment in this one of our shows or as soon as we're able to. But we also have a YouTube channel, as stated before. The link to it is in the description down below. But you can always go to YouTube.com or use your YouTube app on your mobile device and search up for Longcoat Mafia. You could search up Longcoat Mafia Podcast, and we will come up. We have been putting out so much content lately in regards to various things that we hope you watch and subscribe. We're still on the road to 100 subscribers, so please hit that subscribe button. We're putting up more and more content there on, if not a weekly, monthly basis than we are here on the audio side of things, so please check us out there. So maybe we'll have, like we talked about cycles here on this episode. Maybe that's a cycle for the show. We do a little bit of YouTube, get tired of YouTube, go back and record audio episodes more frequently. And when we get tired of recording audio episodes, we'll go back to YouTube. And vice versa, until we find that middle ground that we enjoy so much. But we thank you for sticking with us, especially when we head into our seventh year, or since we had our seventh anniversary, heading into the next year. And we'll speak to you hopefully over the next time. I say, as much as I would say next week, I hope we could speak to you next time, whenever that might be. I'm the Reverend Godfather, and I am out of here.
You've been listening to the Longcoat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.